This is my first time.
First time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I am watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm also watching Babylon 5 for the first time. Jeff and I are two veteran Star Trek podcasters who are watching Babylon 5 for the first time. We're going to search for Star Trek-like messages throughout the course of the series, applying that lens that we have earned as Star Trek podcasters to Babylon 5 and seeing how close does Babylon 5 line up to Star Trek, because we've always heard that. But also, we're going to try to decide if we should have watched this show sooner.
That's right. And while this is not a podcast about Star Trek, literally in the name that it's not a Star Trek podcast. Like Brent said, we're Star Trek podcasters. We're going to make the references. I think, Brent, you've seen every episode of Star Trek, what, 47 times?
That's what I say on my podcast. Yeah. I won't tell you if it's true or not, but that's what I say on the show.
Ish, right? 47-ish. But that's just, you're going to get them. But to help us kind of stay on task, right, stay on target with this whole thing, we have the rule of three. We get three Trek references a piece per episode. So, Brent, choose your spots carefully.
It's like a game. That's what I like about it. It's like, I'm not going to apologize for making Star Trek references. I'm not going to do it anymore. That was one of the things I always heard. Don't apologize for stuff. It's going to happen, but I like the game. It's fun. The built-in game. So,
And it keeps us honest, I think. Keeps us honest, and it helps keep us focused on the fact that, yeah, we're weighing this against Star Trek, but this is about Babylon 5.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, last week, I think I went out kind of early.
Yeah.
But this week, I'm just declaring it, no way. I don't even know that I'm going to use all three. Wow. I'm not using all three early. I'm putting it down. I'm saying it's not happening. Now, Jeff, we're talking about the second episode of Babylon 5. This is our second episode, third if you count the pilot. We're discussing the show Soul Hunter. Now, for those of you who may not have seen it for a long time, or maybe you just simply haven't watched it, but you're listening to us for some reason anyway, just because you like the way Jeff's voice sounds and I don't annoy you that much. In this episode, our resident Minbari Delenn freaks out when she sees who has landed in their hospital. He's a soul hunter, a being that seeks and finds those who are about to die. And just before they do, he captures their soul, their essence. But only if they're special enough, which Delenn is especially grieved for because her Minbari souls out there that can't go on to join apparently a great cloud soul of Minbari that they all like the force, the Minbari force, I think is kind of what it is. Sinclair really doesn't believe in all this nonsense, but it's causing a ruckus on the station. So he wants this guy gone. But before he leaves, the Soul Hunter sets his sights on Delenn herself because she is a Setai, a member of the ruling class that was there at the fall of their great leader, Dukat. However, another Soul Hunter shows up, this one with a warning for the crew of Babylon 5, because this other Soul Hunter is bad news, often taking lives before they're even ready to die. Cut to Delenn, she's on the table about having her soul sucked out when she's rescued just in time as the first Soul Hunter's collected souls turn on him and the weapon turns and hits him and stuff happens. But Delenn is safe, that's what's really important, and Sinclair doesn't really care what happened. He's just glad it's over, and he bans all Soul Hunters from Babylon 5. That's basically it. Jeff, what are some of your thoughts? What was your overall thoughts? Yeah, just tell us. What do you think of this episode?
Well, I got to own first. I'm going to give you that Dukat piece because that's the dude's name. That doesn't count as a reference. Its name is Dukat. So
thank you.
You get that.
So I looked at you weird because you were about to hit the snooze button. Yep. And I was like, that's not my fault. By the way, it's spelled different. It's spelled different too. So
it's Dukat. Dukat. Yeah. A little bit.
Right.
Well, I think, so my thoughts on this really come, I mean, I have more than I should maybe, but I think out of this whole episode, there's three takeaways for me. That soul hunters are even a thing, and I'm going to come back to that one. This was huge, this next one. Delenn is part of the Grey Council, which is the ruling bit of the Minbari. And so, like, if she's part of the Grey Council, what is she doing as an ambassador on Babylon 5. And with that, when Murder Soul Hunter guy is holding on or extracting her soul, mm-hmm. he looks at it because whatever this thing is, soul, essence, whatever, it's legit. Mm-hmm. Like he's yeah. getting information from them. And he looks at this and he's like, you planned such a thing? You'll do such a thing? So she's either done a thing or planned a thing that he thinks is absolutely incredible. My mind goes to what we saw in the gathering and that stuff, right, between the Minbari and the Earth War that happened there, and that we'll probably see a connection. But to me, the whole concept of this episode has massive religious and spiritual implications, right? So because aside from Sinclair and the new chief medical officer, Dr. Franklin, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like a line where he actually just says, he's like, this is nonsense. This is ridiculous. Right. But there it is. We see it. Everyone else just accepts that there's a soul. And apparently it's a big deal that they're capturing them. To me, the soul hunters talk about how they're preserving these really important people for posterity's sake. And that seems like a really cool thing. I would love to be able to go somewhere and talk with my ancestors, you know, have a conversation with them and learn things. But apparently maybe there's, like you said, there's the force, there's heaven, there's something out there. I don't know. I think this has some massive implications for what religion is in this Babylon 5 universe. What about you? You gave us a good rundown, but what did you get out of this?
Well, there's a lot here, but my overall thought is, I didn't love this episode. I'm going to be honest. Like, it was a bit of a drudge to get through. I still don't know what's really going on Babylon 5. Like, that's where I am right now. We're two episodes in, and I feel like I should know and understand more of what's happening than what I really do. And those listeners out there who've seen Babylon 5 and stuff, I'm sure they're like, oh, you have no idea. And I'm just like, I don't. And I'm trying to see how all of this fits together, because apparently, as we've been told, this is a 5-chapter movie, and the whole, like, each season's a chapter. So I'm trying to figure out how these fit together as part of a chapter. But I didn't necessarily catch the religious aspect of it, although I certainly understand why someone would. I really do.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, religion is a thing in the world, aka the universe. It happens out there, and different people have different religions, and different people think different things. Whether or not that's actually what happens, not even other shows really answer that question. Like sci-fi in general, when it deals with religion, like it kind of says that it's all bogus, but it always leaves it open as a possibility.
Yeah.
Like every sci-fi show does that.
Yeah, because they'll outright say it's nonsense. But then they'll also have a whole story about, well, maybe it's not. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, and this is not a Star Trek reference, because Stargate does it, and Star Wars also does it, and lots of other ones. I think The Expanse does it on some level. Battlestar Galactica does it. Like, they all do it. And there's always something to the religion. In this case, we literally see the little glowy dot souls floating around. So there's something real about it. What this almost feels like to me is, like, it's just not a fun episode, but I feel like the Soul Hunter has to come back into this somehow, or Soul Hunters has to come back into this whole piece. And I want to see where they go with it. Like, okay, here's your Star Trek reference. Do you remember when we first met Luxana Troi?
Very well.
It was not that Luxana was not the Luxana we got later on in the show. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like that first episode, like she's mischievous, she's troublemaking, but she was kind of a jerk.
Right.
You know, she wasn't playful, she wasn't flirty, she wasn't the gregarious, you know, person. And that changed, and kind of hope that's what's going to happen here with Soul Hunter. Like, they come back in and they interweave, and we get the 5 or 6 episodes over the course of the whole series that they may show up in, like, we're going to find out more about them.
Yeah, I could see that.
Kind of hope that's what's going
to
happen.
Before you move on, just had to get it in. Just had to record it officially.
I didn't say I wasn't going to use any of them.
Exactly.
I just said not all of them very early. But the other thing that I Well, I want to come back to your whole thing about Delenn and what her deal is and the whole Satai, because I had a thought on that as well, which I want to talk about. But like I say, overall, it was a episode. I kind of hope that it is going to come back and mean a lot more later. But I was more interested in everything else that was happening more than I was in the Soul Hunter bit.
Well, there was some cool stuff in the station, right, that was going on. I think with the Soul Hunters, my guess, here we go, like anyone who's watched the show can call me an idiot after this, but it's not going to be so much the Soul Hunters that are something we get, but the souls themselves, right? Because that's
cool.
Yeah. These are just important, notable people. There's going to be some mystery, some something. They're going to be like, if only we could talk to so and well, you know what? The Soul Hunters have so and so. Let's go.
Soul Hunters have Dukat.
Exactly.
And let's go get him back or something. Yeah.
He was a big deal, you know, but there was this little moment early in the episode that I don't know. This is a theme I'm starting to see with Sinclair, right? So Murder Soul Hunter's ship is damaged. It comes through the jump gate and it's barreling towards the station.
Oh,
it's right. Oh my god, the whole thing's gonna cut. The commander of the last best hope for peace jumps in a fighter and tries to use a grappling hook. Like they don't have built-in defenses for something like this. And why is it Sinclair solving this problem? I didn't understand that at all.
And they did this in the last episode too, that when Sinclair wanted to disobey orders, he's going to go off on the off ship mission. And no.
Yeah.
This is why you have other people. Like, he should not be the one going to do that. Like, I agree. It's almost obnoxious.
I don't know. And this is a debate a lot of people have. But Captain Kirk would always there's mine. Kirk would always lead the away mission. Kirk would always go to the planet. It would Kirk. But what Kirk also did is he took teams with him. He took other people and he would often open up the door for other people to do things. He wanted to be, you know, the cowboy that rode in on the white horse and saved the day. He wanted to be that, but he also understood there's a team. I don't think Sinclair cares about his team at this point. We saw him, like you said, we saw him jump out to do the Raider thing before. We saw the whole thing about like, Commander, something's going wrong after he tries to take some time. You know, he's off shift. This, where he's the one jumping out to grapple the Soul Hunter's ship. Dude, you have a massive station to command. You're the ambassador from Earth. How? Yeah. How do you have the time to do these things? Yeah. To me, that's just a hallmark of poor leadership.
I think it's also a hallmark of poor writing or budgetary writing. We can only afford so many actors. And you have the guy who's going to be Superman, the guy who's going to do it all. And frankly, he shouldn't be doing it all. And like almost in a way, it takes you out of the show because it's, you know, listen,
it's unbelievable.
I can suspend disbelief about aliens and all of this stuff and jump gates and all of that. You're doing too much, though. That's where I draw a line.
Well, and they even call it out. So there's the whole like investigation into the Soul Hunter. And there's a moment where, like you said, the normal Soul Hunter comes on board and he's like, hey, this guy's a danger. We're trying to catch him. But they don't know that. All they know is that Soul Hunters are, you know, these wild people. So Sinclair says, I'm going to meet him. And Garibaldi's like, dude, knock it off.
Yeah.
You're not the hero. And the quote he says too, he says, I hate it when you get heroic. Cuts into my business. So they're even calling themselves out, like there for him getting involved in everything. I don't know. It's just a thing I think that sci-fi was doing up to this point, and even for a while afterwards, but I can't help but hope this blows up in his face somehow. You can't command, you can't do it all. You just can't do it.
Right. And that's not to say that your commander can't ever go off station and go do stuff, but this was an active mission of some importance that required skill and required something. And there are other people on the station who have to have at least equal skill as to the commander, or you should let them go do it anyway. Like, you know, you don't see him, like you don't see people running up and pushing their pilot out of the way. So let me fly the ship. Like, no, you're the captain. Go sit in the chair.
Yeah.
Like that's what you're supposed to do. So I'm with you on that. That one was tough for me. Can I give you something else that was tough for me?
Yeah.
Where was Londo and Jakar?
Yes.
Completely absent from this whole episode. The two best characters on the station right now, in my opinion.
The exact note that I took here, and I'm going to emphasize the capitals, they are this show to me at this point. And I think, you know, I mean, this is kind of giving the end away a little bit, but I mean, this is our second episode plus the pilot. Soul Hunter's not even ranking in the top three for me at this point. So you do that math. But right. One of the key things to look at there is there's no Jakar in Londo. And let's dive in a little bit with the Len, because I have struggled with the Len since the Gathering. I just don't understand her.
I'm sorry, before you say that, also Kosh or Vosh or whatever he is, he wasn't in this episode like
at all.
We have five main species and we're dealing with one, and the others don't even make the obligatory "we're paying you for this episode anyway, so we're gonna put you in" appearance.
I mean, you can hope. I hope they didn't have to get into makeup or anything, you know. Maybe they got a week off, or maybe it was one of those things they made him get in makeup. They filmed a scene and then they cut it. Would suck.
Yeah.
But yeah, Delenn, anyway, I've struggled. I think you and I, this is obvious to anybody listening. I love Jakar. I love Londo. I love them as a thing. Delenn, I don't really have a pulse on at this point in any way. And this episode, I think, should have gone further in helping me get one. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not there. I don't really understand where she's coming from.
I think that is the point right now.
Yeah.
Because there is this overhanging mystery of the Minbari had Earth on its heels and then they just stopped.
Gave up,
And there's she almost seems like the elder statesman of the whole group. Like, because frankly, even Seclair doesn't really feel like he knows what he's doing. Londo and Jakar are at each other's throats. Kosh, who knows what's going on with him, you know? But like, Delenn feels like she's kind of
she's the adult. She's the grown up. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's something with her that I feel like we're not supposed to know just yet. Although I do hope we get to know her more as we go through. I have a question that has nothing to do with her personality, though.
Yeah.
Did they change her makeup again?
I think so.
Because I just noticed, I don't know if it was in the last episode or not, but I noticed in this one she had like the last Airbender blue arrow thing on her head, which really stood out to me. Like, I was like, is that new?
In the last episode, she had, I don't know if it was something on the bridge of her nose with the makeup or something, but she just had this weird kind of, she seemed cross-eyed at weird times in there. And I didn't get that in this one at all. It just seemed more comfortable.
If the camera was at a weird angle. Maybe they're still, and we've seen in other sci-fi shows how they change makeup a little bit as they go and figure it out.
And I think, it just takes, you fit the actor's face. They're like, hey, we made this prosthesis. Oh, you're shaped differently. Who knew?
Right. So let's dive. I want to go back to actually stuff about Delenn. I want to go back to what you said kind of in your opening thoughts about the whole murder of Dukat and Delenn and what this has to do, because I have a theory that is actually, I think, very similar to what you just said there is, she said the Soul Hunter said to Delenn, he's like, wait, you were there when Dukat died. He said, you were there.
Right.
And so I'm going to have my theory is more honed into, I really think that Dukat getting killed is either connected to or is the reason that the Minbari pulled back.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't know why, and I don't know exactly how, and I don't know if it's the actual reason or if it's like this happened and then something else happened that caused them to pull back. I don't know what it is. But, you know, and obviously Delenn was there, like she fully gets it.
Yeah.
And she's there's something more with her. And that's why she's the Satai. And that's why all that's going on. But I think it's a direct connection. The killing of Dukat has everything to do with why they pulled back.
OK, I love that. Right. Because I don't know what I'm thinking as you said that, too, is we don't know when Delenn became a Satai. Maybe she's in his spot. Like, I don't know how the council works, but I really could see that Dukat dying being this domino that fell that just, it didn't fall in a straight line, right? It hit like six different sets of dominoes, including the Earth Minbari War, Delenn and the Grey Council, and who knows what else? Because it was, that was a piece of this episode that like stuck out, was Dukat and then Murder Soul Hunter going specifically after Delenn. Stand by, we'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5First. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5First. We can't wait to see you there.
Well, and then to follow that up, Sinclair clearly asked the question, clearly said it to us. What is one of the great leaders of the Minbari doing playing ambassador? Like, that is the question. And we better find that out. Like, this better be where the show goes. Because if they just sort of let this trail off, I'm going to be so mad, Jeff. Like, this is what you're telling me you're going to find out. And that's where we need to go. I'm not worried about other things going on out there.
They even hint at it a little bit, right? Because she's, you know, getting her blood, you know, because Murder Soul Hunter guy decided to gently drain her blood to kill her really slowly while using one of the worst props I've seen in any.
Are you talking about the actual thing that sucks the soul out?
Yeah, the actual soul sucker. Yeah.
Right.
What was that? I've got a used Jiffy Pop container I can cut a hole in. That would have looked bad on Lost in Space, like the original. That was wow.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it seriously, it looked like stuff that there's my kid's toy box downstairs of all his broken toys. And they go in and they're going to like just glue crap together and cut pieces apart and come up with a ray gun. That's what it looked like.
No, yeah. Paint it silver and then it's future or whatever. And yeah. Like, it's so cool. I love because Sinclair takes him out by pointing the soul sucker at him. And I don't know, like, I have to imagine that, like, the actor is like pushing that over and just being like, oh my God, I look like an idiot. This is the worst thing. I can't believe, I hope this gets canceled tomorrow. Or it's a good thing they're paying me what they're paying me on this. But oh, it looked so, but anyway, they drained. So they got her taken care of in the med bay or whatever. And she's kind of woozy, you know, not quite there. Mm-hmm. And she starts to give it away. And, right. And Sinclair asked the question, and then she goes, you know, passes out again. He's like, yeah, that's a sentence we'll never hear. What do you say? I'll bet you a year's salary. That's we'll never hear the end of that sentence. And we, the viewers, had better hear the end of that sentence.
Right.
Yeah. And also Sinclair's out there grappling hooks, doing all the dirty work. Maybe he should be reading up on like intergalactic species relationships. How did nobody know what this soul hunter was? Every single alien species, what was like 12 or 18 ships were leaving early. He's like, we're out of here. This guy's on board. Everybody knew it was up except like Earth's like, I don't understand.
Hey, what's a soul hunter?
Hey, what's the big deal?
Hey, where's everybody going?
Is there something wrong here? The lens literally screamed, murder, murder him now. Why? What's the big deal? Two real episodes in, and I feel like humanity just look like morons so far.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. Right.
Well, speaking of humanity looking like morons, Delenn straight up pulls Garibaldi's weapon from the holster.
Right.
Holsters today have holster retention protection, so nobody but the person who is actually supposed to pull the gun can pull the gun out. Like, you can't run up to somebody else and grab their gun out of their holster. Like, if it's properly tied in, and any police officer, any security officer is going to have that. You can't run up and grab their holster. Do they not have that in the future?
Apparently not. Maybe they trust, right? It's cool, right? No weapons are allowed, so we're going to trust you to not do this. Yikes. Right. I think my last cool thing I want to say is that when Dr. Franklin, the new chief medical officer, came on board, they actually acknowledged the doctor from the gathering. They acknowledged Dr. Kyle, said that, you know, they passed each other in a thing. And Dr. Kyle, so in last episode, I talked about Luis Santiago becoming president of Earth and the questions I have there. They mentioned Dr. Kyle working now as part of the Santiago administration. So again, like, I'm just looking, there's going to be something, and maybe we get to see Dr. Kyle again. I'm cool with that. I like Dr. Kyle, but I'm still thinking they're putting some little breadcrumbs on this Earth President path for us.
Oh, with the whole like preserving Earth cultures and all that stuff we talked about last time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So new Doctor, I kind of like this new Doctor. I don't know that I like him more than Dr. Kyle. Like Dr. Kyle was kind of cool.
He was.
But this guy, he, you know, he's younger. He's honestly, he's far more handsome.
Good looking guy.
He's the new guy. Like I 100% see why they would have made a change from the actor. They would have recast this particular role and put it. I'm just glad they didn't call this new guy Dr. Kyle. Like,
acknowledge. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. At least acknowledge that. Yeah.
What I, the thing I loved about him, he has that doctor confidence, right? Like that, especially when they're talking about the soul sucking activity, whatever. And just, he just looks at Sinclair. He's like, yeah, this is nonsense. Like this guy's wasting our time right now. And just the confidence he has in there. Yeah. I think I'm going to like Dr. Kyle a lot.
I was thinking about this. Get your finger ready. Here's my next Star Trek reference. Not Dr. Kyle. What's the new guy's name?
Dr. Franklin.
Dr. Franklin. Because I had a thought on this. If you had to compare Dr. Franklin to any of the other Star Trek doctors, who do you compare him to? Who does he remind you of the most?
I hadn't thought of that at all. Pulaski.
Yes. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Totally.
It's Pulaski. Absolutely.
Who is great, by the way. Like, total aside on Babylon 5. She's great. Got a bad rap. And yeah, she was fantastic.
She was far more interesting than Beverly Crusher. Don't anybody help me.
Yeah.
Don't anybody ever tell Gates. I love Gates, but Dr. Pulaski was awesome.
Awesome.
She really was.
And even had had a full season arc on her quote unquote racism towards Data. Like she actually changed as a character within one season, which is more than you can say for the six that we had. Yeah. So,
I've got a couple things for you.
Okay.
A couple of fun things that I noticed. Did you notice the name of the shuttlecraft that was coming in?
No.
The Izamov.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. You always love to hear Izamov in any kind of sci-fi thing, no matter who it's from. Okay. Back of the hand communicators.
Yeah.
I noticed it on Sinclair's hand in the last episode. And in this one, he's running down the hallway, like speaking into the back of his hand. And it's this little thing that they slap on the back of their hand. Those suck.
Totally.
And like, it looks kind of futuristic, but I have an Apple Watch on my hand and I can use my Apple Watch as a phone when my regular phone's not around. And I got to tell you, holding my hand up to my face to communicate makes my arm tired.
And it sounds terrible. You sound terrible. I have an Apple Watch as well. And I used the phone app one time when I first got it. Cause I'm like, this is so cool. And I'm like, this sucks. My arm's tired. I can't hear anything. Who would do this?
And like when I go back and I think of like Get Smart or, you know, any of those spies that like they're using their watch, I'm going to talk to you into my wrist. Like, no. No.
Well, how brilliant was it of the next generation? But to put
your two, right?
Two.
Two and two?
Two and two. Okay. It's, right, two it's and hard. Two. But I mean, just to put it on the chest. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. That might be the most meaningful innovation out of the next generation, you know?
And it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. Although I got to tell you, I have a comm badge, a next generation comm badge that Bluetooths to my phone.
Oh, that's awesome.
And has a speaker and a microphone in it. And it's a functioning comm badge. It's horrible.
Really?
Yeah. You can, the sound quality is not any good. I'm not really sure that people, if you have other stuff happening around you, it picks up all that noise. It's cool. It's gimmicky, but it's not truly practical. And, you know, let's just say in the future, those things get better, but the hand ones on the back, like, do you remember the, here comes my third one. in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, each show had their own version of flashlights.
Yes.
That were like, one of them was like a box that was held in a hand and that's how you used it. And like, no
way
that doesn't work. And the other one the other one was like a wrist strap and you held your wrist up like you were doing a thing. And like, no, the most practical thing is do what we have today, which is a handle with a flashlight that you can just point because holding it with your wrist up, you literally have eliminated your entire hand at that point. And no matter what you do with your hand, it's going in that direction. Like if I can't hold a flashlight in my hand, you know what? I can stick it in my neck and hold it that way. Or, you know, under my arm while I'm trying to do something. Well,
and frankly, we have a quasi-military organization here, and we've all seen law enforcement or whatever with a, you know, flashlight in one hand, a firearm in the other. And you go, you put that thing on your wrist, and now one's pointing this way and the other's pointing that. Yeah. There's nothing good about that. No.
Yeah. So anyway, stuff on the back of the hand. Yes, it looks cool, but I'm calling it out and just say in reality, it's not good.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Okay. Last thing, Soul Hunter literally used the guard I'm injured trick to get out of a cell.
Yep. Right.
Really?
Really? Well, not only did he use it, but may God bless our favorite guest actor in so many things, William Morgan Shepherd, who is just, I mean, incredible.
Oh yeah. That was the Soul Hunter.
Yeah. In this one, he's right? Incredible. Wow. Did they turn like, it's like, hey, here's your direction. I want you to take the appropriate level that you'd play this guy at, turn that up by 10 and then turn it up a little bit more. Oh my God. It was hard to watch this guy go. It was rough.
Right.
That was rough. Right.
I think we've hit that spot where we're going to boil it all down and see if it has any of that Star Trek-y quality to it. Okay, we got to take away the buzzer because now we're there. Does it have a deep moral message to it, or is it holding up a mirror to society? You know, Babylon 5 and Star Trek are basically the same thing. Like, is it that? Should we have watched this episode a lot sooner? What do you think?
So, you know, last week, I think that we had some pretty good back and forth about the Star Trek message that potentially was or wasn't in that one. Mm-hmm. This one, you know, we really talk about a couple things. You know, what kind of were our closing thoughts? Would we watch this again? And then we're going to rate it 0 to 5 deltas as to how Star Trek the episode was. In my opinion, I don't see any reason this episode could have or should have happened. This could have been a mention, a part, something else in another episode. Oh, by the way, there are these Soul Hunters. This thing happens. Could have been a B story or something. It wasn't enough to carry an episode. I've watched this episode now, preparing for this, 3 times. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And in my opinion, I'll own the first 44 minutes because that's what we're doing for the podcast. That's 88 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back. And I feel like somebody owes me on that. But on a scale of 0 to 5 Star Trek messages, this one gets 0 deltas from me. Mm. What about you?
I am willing to give this it's a first season episode that's just not very good. I hope it circles back and this one becomes more important later on. And you just go, it wasn't the greatest episode, but it was still important. It set some certain things up and did what we needed to. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe this has zero bearing going forward on anything else. Or maybe the only thing that we really learned here, the whole thing that we learned here was the lens of Satai. And that's the thing that's going to carry us through. Like we could have learned that. I didn't need a whole episode for that. I'm going to give it a 1 delta.
Wow. Okay.
Because I did find a Star Trek thing that I really liked. It was not what the show was going for.
Okay.
But if it was in Star Trek, it's absolutely what Star Trek would be going for. And here's what I want to say. Last week, I was pretty miffed at the idea that they replaced Commodore O, Takashima.
Yep.
They replaced a strong ethnic female character with the white chick. Although I love Ivanova.
She's great.
I just want to say that.
She's
like
great.
She is great. But she says in this particular episode, she says, I'm Russian. Now, in 1994, that's a big deal. Now compare that to 1968 when Star Trek first introduced Chekhov as a Russian in the middle of the Cold War. In 1994, we get a Russian who's in a command position as the Cold War in real life is ending. And the Berlin Wall has felled. Yeah. I think at this point, the USSR is dissolving or is about to be dissolved. Like all of that stuff is happening. And we're taking a Russian and putting them in command, not, you know, in that
a trusted,
executive
a trusted
level
position.
Command. They're not the captain, but still they're right there. And they're much higher than what Chekhov was on the bridge of the Enterprise. And the fact that you put that there in 1994 to say Earth is going to come together and we're going to get past this crap that we're in right now in 1994, and we're going to be able to move forward and be in hope. I find hope and I find positive messages in that that is super Star Trek. I do not think that's what JMS was trying to write. I do not think that that was a message he was, maybe he was, I don't know, but I don't think that that's really where he was going, but it's there anyway. And I really loved it. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the episode
at all.
It just was, which was some of the original, like the fact Uhura's on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise was, and the fact that Sulu was there as a pilot. It never was about those guys or about the fact that they're there, but the fact that they were there was important. And I feel that same way here about this. Other than that, I have nothing else about this episode that I think is important or that I think is Star Trek.
That's a great find.
I give it the one Delta, and that's about what I can do. I don't need to see this episode ever again.
Agreed.
I'm okay.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
I just got to double down on your find. I think it's a great one. I was a senior in high school in 1994. I lived through the falling of the Berlin Wall. My high school years was the end of the Cold War. It's very formative for me. And it was a big deal. We literally, like me and my generation, the target audience really for Babylon 5 at the time, our whole lives were built on Soviets are bad. Russians are bad, right? We had movies like Red Dawn and Ruskies and stuff like that eventually turned into Rocky IV. Yeah. You know, if I can change, you can change. It was just, I mean, we needed those messages.
Yeah.
I think you're right. This is Babylon 5 making the Rocky speech. It is a great best hope for peace.
Yeah,
that's a good find.
And I tell you that maybe JMS absolutely meant to do it that way.
Yeah, that's great.
So,
well, I'm happy, very happy right now to put a stamp on Soul Hunter. We're done. We did it. We made it. Next week, the episode is called Born to the Purple. And after this, you and I.
Is it?
Yeah, we're going to be watching that one for the first time. Born to the Purple.
Purple, okay.
So we haven't seen this before. And please, please, please laugh at us. Please tell us we're morons. Tell us we have no idea. Yes. Don't spoil anything for us.
Don't send us tweets.
Nothing.
And say, oh, wait until XYZ happens. Please don't do that.
Don't
do that.
All we do is look at the title. The title of the next episode, nothing more, not even a picture, nothing. So we know it's Born to the Purple. What we like to do, though, the other game we play, is we're going to guess what it's about.
Oh, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what do you think, bro? Born to the Purple.
Born to the Purple. Okay. Purple is a regal color. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be like somebody's going to come on board the station. Somebody's going to come onto the station who is supposed to be like the next king of some world or queen of some world, the next ruler, and they don't want to be, and they're seeking asylum on the station.
Okay. That sounds good.
Something of that nature.
My guess is we had heard a bit about the Minbari caste system a little while ago. I think this is going to be almost similar to what you're saying, but I think purple might be a designation for a caste within that society, and it might be someone born to a caste who's trying to break out of that in some way. We shall see. And we'll find out right here on Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, even if you're not listening on Apple Podcasts, why don't you drop by, leave us a rating and review? That'd be fantastic. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at Babylon First. So in the meantime, remember to be good, be well, and live long.
Jeff!
Oh my gosh.
Not a Star Trek podcast.
I'm going to get it eventually.
It's my first time.